We've been looking at some how-to things. I don't know about you, but I enjoy doing that that do-it-yourself stuff. Anybody a do-it-yourselfer out there? Of course, yeah. We just do what we can, right? And there's some things, there's some how-tos, some things that you know we can do. Obviously, in Christianity, things we need to do as far as reminding ourselves of some things. And I thought this morning's class would be appropriate. Our topic. I want to say also before we begin that this subject, you might have some different ideas on this subject than what we might be reading about this morning. There is some confusion on this particular topic, and but it is a poignant topic. It's a topic that we will be dealing with quite a bit, especially after a hurricane and before a hurricane. So we'll be looking at this morning how to be benevolent. Benevolence. What is it, and what is it that we as a church, we as an individual, need to do? What's our responsibility in way of benevolence? Of course, when we talk about what benevolence is, we can just get a few things out of the way. But it is a disposition to do good. When we think about benevolence, what are we thinking about? What do you guys think about? Giving? Feeding the hungry, right? Hashtag 5,000, so right side, yeah. So helping people, doing what we can for those around us, so being benevolent. And so we'll be looking at what the Bible says about benevolence this morning, and it doesn't leave us without any information. So we look at benevolence. Let's look at a few passages, maybe. What does the Bible say about benevolence? Matthew 25. This passage is in the context of judgment. And remember in this passage, Matthew chapter 25, Jesus is saying, you know, when you saw me naked, you clothed me and you fed me. And the people responded, when do we see you naked? When do we see you without clothing? And those kind of things. And the king will answer and said to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these, my brothers of mine, even to the least of them, you did it to me. And this is a famous passage looking at benevolence and how we need to feed and do as much as we can in the area of benevolence. But what is a key part of this Bible passage? Yes, sir. Brothers of mine. We're going to be looking at some things that the Bible talks about, what a congregational. We're going to be looking at it in two different ways. There's what we as a congregation, what is our responsibility as a congregation, and then what is my individual responsibility in view of benevolence. And so we'll be looking at those kind of things. So just remember that this brothers of mine kind of concept that sometimes gets overlooked in the area of benevolence. So continuing on, Matthew or Mark 9. For whoever gives you a cup of water to drink because of your name as followers of Christ, truly I say to you, he will not lose his reward. Acts chapter 2. What do we see in Acts chapter 2 in the beginning of the church? What were they doing? They were taking care of each other. They didn't set up a compound and not, you know, have this, you know, live in a commune necessarily, right? But they were taking care of each other, right? This wasn't a Branch Davidian thing. This was a congregation taking care of one another. Nobody got that. Never mind. You need to wake up this morning. Some of y'all are lacking some of your caffeine, all right? So there is a situation where the church needs to take care of its own. And we see that at the very beginning of the church. We've talked about this before. What was the need? Why was there such a great need at the very beginning of the congregation, of the church, of the Lord's body? Why was there such a great need in Acts 2? They were out-of-towners, right? We know about out-of-towners. So they were out-of-towners. They'd come into this area. And, you know, there was, all of a sudden there was a hurricane. No, they came into this area and they had traveled and now they've finally heard the good news and they're staying so that they can hear more about it, but there becomes a need. If you make a trip anywhere, what do you usually plan for? How long are you going to be gone? What kind of resources I need and that kind of stuff? And all of a sudden, the Messiah and has been crucified, and the church begins, and you're like, well, I got to go home. I'm running out of money. We're going to leave. No, of course you're going to stay as much as you can, right? And so that becomes a need there in the early church. And so it becomes a part of what the church does for the church. Again in Acts 4, and the congregation of those who believed were of one heart and soul. Not one of them claimed that anything belonging to him was his own. How do we view our stuff? It's mine, right? There's a key word, our, possessive. So we view our stuff, and we look online at other stuff that we wouldn't mind being our stuff as well, and we look at stuff, right? How should we view our stuff? It's God's stuff, right? This God has blessed me with a home. God has blessed me with means to help and to do things for other people. I should view my stuff in a way that I can help others with my stuff. God's blessed me. I want to use it to His glory. We're foreshadowing here where our lesson's going, but God has blessed me. I want to use it to His glory. But my stuff might get messed up. It might get scratched. It might get broken. It might get stolen. It might get... Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. Sometimes we put our hedge around ourselves and protect ourselves, and we put our hedge around ourselves to the point where we're taking ourselves out of an opportunity to do good things we need to be doing. So in this case, the church was taking care of the church. Nothing belonged to any individual member. Nothing really belonged to themselves. It was not their own, but all things were common property to them. The great power of the apostles. So we see the beginning that was going on. Who do we see here? For there was not a needy person among them, for all who were owners of land and houses would sell them, bring them to the sale, and lay them at the apostles' feet, and they would be distributed each as any had need. And Barnabas is mentioned here in this context. And then what happens in Acts 5? Ananias and Sapphira want to get in on that gig, right? And they were fine. It was fine that they sold their property and gave half of the money, right? Or whatever it was, right? That was fine. That was not a problem. What was the problem? When they lied about it and said, well, it was everything, right? That's another story altogether. But we see at the very beginning of the church, this is the church was taken care of the church. And that's what benevolence was and is. Acts chapter 11. One of them named Agabus. That's a really cool name. Am I in the same? Yes. One of them named Agabus stood up and began to indicate by the Spirit that there would certainly be a great famine all over the world. And this took place in the reign of Claudius. And the proportion that any of the disciples had means, each of them determined to send a contribution for the relief of the brethren living in Judea. And this they did, sending in charge of Barnabas and Saul to the elders. What does this set up? So we saw earlier in Acts 2 and Acts 4, we see a congregation taking care of a congregation, right? This is Churches of Christ Disaster Relief. This is their motto, right? No, can a congregation help another congregation? Yes, it can, and it should. This is an example of that. One congregation can send funds to help another congregation. We may be in that situation coming next week. We have congregations that are in the path of a Cat 5 hurricane, right? We may be in a situation where we're doing that. We've done it before, and we may be doing a situation where we're doing it again. So this is what this is talking about. So when we look at benevolence, there is a local congregation taking care of the local congregation and doing what they can. And we'll talk about some other details in connection with that. But it's also a situation where a congregation can send funds to help another congregation, and in this case, because of a famine, because of a hurricane, it could be for whatever reason has come upon them, that can be the case as well. So we see that here. And we have other passages that talk about this very incident as well. Romans chapter 15. For Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make a contribution for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. Yes, they were pleased to do so, and they are indebted to them. So this is a poor among whom? The saints in Jerusalem. We're talking about a specific group of people, right? And so He says, "For if the Gentiles have shared in their spiritual things, they are indebted to minister them also in material things." And again, we see that kind of dichotomy between spiritual and material. Material is not our focus, right? And it's not something that we are wanting to gather up and store up for ourselves. There was a certain parable about a rich man who said he tore down his barns and built bigger barns and, you know, eat, drink, and be merry, right? So what happened to him? Thou fool, right? He kind of died. That's a sin. We need to make sure that we're keeping things in perspective that way as well. In 2 Corinthians, did I skip one? No, 1 Corinthians, rather, I'm sorry. 1 Corinthians, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I declared to the churches in Galatia, so do you also on the first day of the week." Have you read this before, anybody? All right, so we might have read this once or twice. What we gather is to go towards benevolence. But when we look at this, now concerning the collection for everybody in Palm Beach County, for the saints, all of us have hearts. Some of them are softer than others. We'll just put that. All of us have hearts. All of us see people that are in need. All of us hurt and empathize with people who are in need. And for 25 cents a day, do you remember those commercials? For 25 cents a day. Do you remember, anybody, am I? Okay. Do they still do those anyway? I don't watch TV. Okay, so it's what? 3 a.m. Says a firefighter who's up at 3 a.m. Okay, you're used to be up, right? You're retired now. You're not up anymore. But what are they doing? We're appealing to our emotion, right? And that's there. It's legitimate. It's a legitimate concern. But when our emotion is not educated, what happens? We get sucked into all these different things. All of a sudden, I might need some help, right? So there is a sense that we need to be wise in dealing with benevolence. The Bible has given us guidance on that, and we'll talk some more about that in a moment. But we must understand that we do see a need and we want to help. But we need to make sure we're doing it in a way that, one, is helpful. I've seen very, very dire situations. Some of them we could help. Some of them, we were not prepared to help. You go to a foreign country and you see people who are living in ways that are not like we would live, and what do we want to do? Well, they need this, and they need this, and they need this because that's what I have. And you spend all your money to give them that, and you walk away, and that's not what they're used to. That's not how they live. And so we need to be aware, and that's, of course, a drastic scenario, but there are other things that we'll get into. We need to be wise in what we're doing with these things. 2 Corinthians, this is one I was mentioned earlier. "Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God, which has been given in the churches of Macedonia, that in great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality." Which is a fancy way of saying what? What is Paul saying that the churches of Macedonia were doing in giving to the saints? They were poor and giving anyway. And what's anyway says, "For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging and for the favor of participation in the support of the saints." How is that different? I think that's way over here on this side. What would be the other side of that coin? I'm not giving anything. Or I'm holding on to everything. So here's people who are way over here. They're begging, "Please take my money. Please take this." And you're saying, "You don't have enough to go, but God will provide. Please take this." Why? What's the motivation here? For the favor of participation in support of the saints. Somebody here taught me a lesson about giving one time. we were getting ready to go on a trip with the youth. It was a mission trip, and she said, "I want you to take this money." And I said, "You don't need to give me that money. We have enough. It's all taken care of." And you don't. And I knew where she didn't have a bunch to be giving away. And she said, "Don't take this away from me." "Yes, ma'am. We will take this." And so here's a situation where they're saying, "Don't take this opportunity away from us, Paul. We want to give. We want to help." And so this is where we need to be as well, in helping support the saints and taking care of each other. That's where we are, because we are family, right? You wouldn't let your family live in squalor. You wouldn't live your, but you know, this, anyway, there's all kinds of things we need to be looking at, some other details, and we only have 45 minutes, Dan. They only let me, they're not extending class this morning, are they? No? Okay. So we only have 45 minutes. All right, so looking at another famous passage. "Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of a God our Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained from the world." And depending on who you are, sometimes we focus on one thing more than the other, right? This is like a go-to passage for benevolence, right? A go-to passage. I mean, there's probably a pure and undefiled religion ministries out there somewhere, right? Or James 127 ministries, hashtag James 127 out there, I'm sure, okay? So when we see this, we need to put this in the context of what the... Is it wrong for me to help a widow or an orphan? No. Is it wrong for me to help... Let's look at some other passages here with this. In Acts chapter 6, now at this time, while the disciples were increasing in number, a complaint arose on the part of the Hellenistic Jews against the native Hebrews because their widows were being overlooked in the daily serving of food. Let's unpack that a little bit. What was happening daily for some widows? They were getting food. They were getting food daily. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5. What advice was Paul giving concerning widows to young Timothy? What's he saying here? We're talking about specific kind of widows. He says, 1, verse 3, "Honor widows who are widows indeed." What are widows indeed? Well, Paul goes on, "But if any widow has children or grandchildren, they must first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family and to make some return to their parents, for this is acceptable in the sight of God." You mean, if my dad dies and my mother's a widow, the Bible expects me to take care of her? Is that what this is saying? Yes, this is what this is saying. How long did our mothers take care of us? What have our mothers done for us? Would you be here without your mother? You would not. This is a miracle. You would not be here without your mother. All right? Well, you don't know my mother. That's true. I don't know your mother. But there are certain things we need to do because they're right, no matter who they are. All right? And I'm not getting into details about anybody's family, but the Bible says there's an expectation that we have to take care of our own family. Now, "She who is a widow indeed and who has been left alone has fixed her hope on God. It continues to in entreaties and prayers night and day. But she who gives herself to wanton pleasures," so this is talking about other things. Look down in verse 8. "But if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." There's not a ministry for that, I don't think, right? So the Bible expects us to take care of our family. I have a responsibility to take care of my family. If I don't do that, what does the Bible say that I am? I have denied the faith, and I am worse than an unbeliever if I won't even take care of my own family. So in areas of benevolence, there is a personal, there's a congregational expectation. A congregation can help other congregations. A congregation can help those who are within. But when it comes down to personal responsibility, I need to take care of my family. I should not expect the church to take care of something I should be taking care of. Well, church needs to be doing this because they have need. Is that your sister? Is that your brother? Is that your mom? Is that your dad? You need to be helping them according to what the Bible has to say about benevolence. There's a responsibility we have individually. In Hebrews chapter 13, oh, you know what? I forget sometimes. I'm advancing it here and it doesn't connect over there. So I apologize about that. But I think I put a slide in here that's not in there. Yep, I did. Okay. All right, so Hebrews chapter 13, verses 2 and 3. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. We're not getting into that discussion about angels. That's not our topic this morning. Dan can deal with that later. It says, remember the prisoners as though in prison with them, and those who are ill-treated, since you yourselves also are in the body. So, again, we'll get into passages specifically talk about this. This mentions that I need to do good to all men. We'll mention that passage later on and what that entails. But this one, remember prisoners as though in prison with them. This means every congregation needs to have a prison ministry. Because if we don't have a prison ministry, then we're not a real church. Is that what this means? Who are the prisoners we're talking about in the context of this passage? Since you yourselves also are in the body. We're talking about those who are in prison unjustly, those who are in prison because of the cause of Christ. That's who we're talking about specifically. Is it wrong to have a prison ministry? No, it's not wrong to have a prison ministry. You have a captive audience, right? You go and talk to them. They have nothing else to do, all right? That's not wrong to have a prison ministry. Is it wrong for me to say, well, you're not a real church if you don't have a prison ministry? That's wrong, right? That's where we get ourselves in trouble. And saying, well, church is a better church because they have a prison ministry and this one doesn't. That's not what this passage is teaching. Let's see if we can... Maybe I got ahead of myself? I don't know. Yes, that's what happened. I'm so far behind. There it is. Okay. Now we're back up to speed. Okay. I need to print them off, Dan. I need to stop trying to be all fancy up here with the computer. Okay, so Galatians chapter 6. Let us not lose heart in doing good. And we've talked about this before in class and talked about there's this empathy fatigue where, you know, you've seen nurses who have been nurses for so long, they no longer feel anything because it gets to where it wears you out. If you're trying to empathize all the time for every individual is the first time. I can't imagine working in an ER. Can't imagine working in trauma in NICU. And all the time, that there's every single time it's that... the red light flashing, and it's like you have to get to a point where you can wall yourself off or you will not function, right? But the Bible says, let us not lose heart in doing good. If I do good, is it possible that somebody might defraud me? Is that my responsibility? Now, I need to be wise and I need to, you know, manage funds and that kind of stuff. Obviously, yes, I understand that. But in the end, what they do with the help that they receive, who is that on? That's on them. That's on them. I need to make sure I'm doing what I need to do. He says, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then while we have opportunity, and this is maybe a formula for us, so while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are the household of faith. Does this help us put things in perspective? When I have opportunity and means, let me do good to all people, especially to those who are the household of faith. So there is a congregational responsibility where a congregation needs to take care of its own, but how does that happen? I need to make sure I'm doing my part in doing good and being benevolent and making sure we're doing. Let's look at 1 John 3. What does 1 John 3:17 say? But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Do I have a responsibility to my brother? Yes, I do. The Bible says I do. If I know somebody has a need and I have an opportunity and I have means to help them, I need to help them. That's what I need to be doing. In James chapter 2, this is maybe James is kind of rough, right? If James was your substitute teacher, he would not be the nice substitute teacher, I don't think. James chapter 2, beginning of verse 15. If a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says, go in peace, be warm and filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? How would we translate that today? How do we update that? I'm praying for you, right? Thoughts and prayers. Being a little cynical, I'm sorry. We need to make sure we're not saying those things just offhand. If you are, just side note, if you do tell somebody, I'm praying for you, tell them specifically what you're praying for them for. Not that it's just an offhand comment. But that's another lesson altogether. But when we look at this, if I see a need, what's the expectation? That we need to do something about it, right? We need to do something about that need. Who's probably the greatest example of seeing a need and filling a need in the Bible? Wasn't even a real person. He has hospitals named after him. Good Sam, right? That's Sam. What did he do? What happened in that story? We all know that story, the Good Samaritan. There was a certain there's a priest and a Levite, and there's a guy that fell among thieves on that section of road that was famous for being a dangerous part of the road, and he fell among thieves, and the priest and Levite did nothing. They walked across the other side of the road, and the Good Samaritan did what? He saw the guy, and he says, you know what? I need to call Feeding 5,000 Ministries. I bet they would do great. Or you know what? I wish we had a ministry at church to help, you know, people who fell among thieves in this section of road. We could set up a stand right over here, and anybody that came across this section of road, we could help them if they fell among thieves. I wish we had that ministry. Or I wish we had that program at church, and I wish we had these kind of things. Then this guy would get taken care of. Is that what he did? Did he wait for a program? Did he wait for a pantry? Did he wait for clothing? Did he wait for the church to do something? Well, he saw a need, and he filled that need. Personal responsibility. I have a personal responsibility. When I see a need, I have opportunity to take care of that need. I need to do it. Now, does it get messy when you start getting the lives of people? Yes, it does, right? I might lose sleep over it. There's a congregation I used to worship with. The deacon told me some stories about benevolence there. There was one guy he went and took some groceries to. One family called and they needed some groceries, so he took him some groceries. He was met at the door by a very capable father figure and gave him some groceries, and he said, are you looking for some work? And he said, no, I'm not really looking for work right now. So he turned to his wife, who was standing behind him, and said, ma'am, these groceries are for you and your children. He kind of looked at him and said, when you start to where you're going to start working, we'll bring some groceries for you too. He went back and visited him. Guess what? Guy was looking for work. He said, that's great. Here's my card if you need help. If you need anything, here's how we can help you. Gave him some more groceries. It's going to get messy. We got to say some things that people don't want to hear sometimes, right? He told the story of another guy that he went and visited. His family called, and her husband was spending all their money on drugs. And she was just in dire need. They have a small daughter. And he would go visit. He and his wife would visit. And they'd visit, and every time they'd visit, he'd go in and he'd bang on the door because this guy would go hide in his room from these Christians coming over. And he'd go bang on the door and say, I know you're in there. Come out and sit with us. Let's talk. Every single time he visited, they would do that. It got to where this guy would wait at the kitchen table because he knew eventually he'd be at the kitchen table anyway. Sorry. Her daughter came forward one Sunday. It would be like, Taylor Sue, it would be like if you came forward and said, pray for my daddy. Everybody in the congregation knew the story. Everybody knew it. Everybody knew what was going on. There was not a dry eye in the congregation. Did you know he's a deacon in the church now? Started with benevolence. Started with personal responsibility. Saying things you don't want to say, but saying them because it needs to be said. There's another couple. This is just odd. Odd people show up sometimes, benevolence. Dan and David used to throw me on the bus back doing my first tour of duty. At least I felt that way. When I was here, there was one time this guy shows up identifying he, her. Guy shows up identifying she, her, missing one leg, rather burly, talked like he was Sling Blade, with his boyfriend in the car with him, asking for money so they can get down to Key West. Dan and Avery are like, I think there's somebody out there for you. Oh, man. You're gonna see some things. But for every 100 of those that happens, there's actual people who just need, if we can get the physical things out of the way, we can begin to see and shine light into their life. Because I don't know if you've ever been hurt before, but when you hurt, what is the thing you're focusing on? The self, and that hurt. But there's a way that we can remove that hurt in a way that's beneficial for you, not enabling you to continue to hurt yourself, right? Because there is a possibility that we can get into a situation where people are using the benevolence of the church to continue to hurt themselves. And that's not what we're in the business of doing. But if you're wanting to help yourself and get out of that, and we can help you remove that hurt, then you can begin to focus on spiritual things, right? There's another couple in this congregation that this deacon went to, and he and his wife worked with them for a long time. She was a stripper, and he was a heathen. And they were calling because all the fussing and fighting they were doing all the time and everything that was going on in their lives, and they would say, well, what are you doing about that? Well, he's beating me now. Well, what'd you do to him? Well, I threw a Coke at him. I'd beat you too if you threw a Coke at me. You know, so there's things that you begin to help them reason out of these things and help them see the light and work with them. That guy is now a deacon in the church. Started with benevolence. We talk about make me a servant. Lord, make me like you. Do we pray that prayer? Use me, use what you've blessed me with to be your servant. And we talk about looking like Jesus, and there's a lot of people out there ready to wear the sandals, but not always ready to wear the heart that goes with that. There's a heart that says, I'll help you, but you need to help yourself too. We need to make sure that we understand with the nature of the church. There's a church. Are we in the business of helping people? Yes, we are. But what is the greatest need that anybody has? They need to be saved. And if we lose sight of what the church is supposed to do and put benevolence as our greatest work, we become just like any other institution that anybody can offer that. The Red Cross, anybody can do that. When we lose sight of what our true purpose is, it is so that we can help them get to heaven and see God and eat from the tree of life. Maybe we need to get some things out of their way along the way. Maybe we need to be benevolent and help them. But we don't need to lose focus of what we're supposed to be doing.
Hey, John.
Yes, sir.
While you're in James, you have James 4:17.
Yes, sir. Read it loud and proud, brother. Okay.
You know.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Can that be a mantra? Him who knows, he knows to do good and does it not. To him it is sin. Are there things we need to be doing? And there's sometimes I will say I've passed by an opportunity and wondered, should I have done something? Do we get in a hurry? Do we get so focused on what's supposed to be happening, what's supposed to be happening? Now, I will say also that if we start and we're doing this and people are changing their lives and we're bringing them to church and they're coming in and worshiping with us, will the congregation look a little different? Are they going to be wearing a tie right off the bat? Are they going to be? No. But again, it's about what we're trying to do. We're trying to get them into Christ. And benevolence takes on so many different things. And again, we talked about earlier, it can get messy. And we will lose sleep. And you will spend some time working with people. And you will spend some time in the trenches helping them get out of sin. And Paul tells Timothy, you are taking them out of the snare of the devil. And that's what we're in the business of doing, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes it means we need to help them get the physical things out of the way so they can see the spiritual, but we need to make sure that we're doing that. So what is the purpose of benevolence? Is it to make sure that to end world hunger? Is that the purpose of benevolence? It's a great thought. It might help you win the beauty pageant, but ending world hunger will never happen. It will never happen. There's a certain individual in the Bible that once said, the poor you will have with you always. He said that in red, so you can guess who that might have been. The poor you will have with you always. And we know that. As long as there's natural disasters, as long as there's people making bad decisions, as long as things happen, good things happen to, or bad things happen to good people and vice versa, there will always be a need. And there will always be a greatest need, and that's dealing with sin. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, and that's a very good point. I don't know if you heard that. We need to make sure we're not feeding into the system. There are people taking advantage of benevolence. There are people who are out there doing that specifically, and we'll do it always, and will not change. You have to be honest with yourself about that. But does that necessarily, I need to be wise in what I do. I need to still, I will get defrauded from time to time. Yes, sir. Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah, well, he's honest about that, right, at least. Will there always be people taking the easy path? Yes, that will happen. Will there always be people looking for a handout and trying to take that easy path? I don't have to work. People are going to give me. Yes. We need to be able to do and say the things to help them make some changes in their life and do the hard things, encourage them to do the hard things and make some better changes. We don't need to be sucked into a situation where we're enabling them not to make those changes. Yes, sir. Yes, and that's where it comes down to the individual choice, right? I have an individual choice. I can buy the person gas. I know they're going to use that in their car, right? If I buy them gas or if I buy them food, I know they're going to use that for their stomach or for their tank. So we can be wise, like you're saying, in using those things. And sometimes, you know, we might get defrauded and but we need to make sure we're using wisdom in talking with people and talk to them. There's some deacons here that do a good job of doing that and know better than I do how to handle those situations. Sometimes I get sucked in to something I shouldn't. I did not give One-Legged Pete and his friend anything. But we do need to make sure we're what? Yes, sir. No, he did not. He did not institute Ministries 5000 at that point, no. And that's what we need to keep in focus, is that we need to help them move to the point where they're working and doing on their own. If they're not working and they're not doing, then there's other things that are going on. Obviously, there are some people that we are not qualified to help, right? There are people who we are not qualified to help. Do not get into a situation where I'm going to help this schizophrenic not be schizophrenic anymore. That is not something you can do, right? And that is not something that many of us in here are qualified to do. But we do need to keep things like that in perspective. Any other thoughts, comments, questions, shout-outs, anything? All right. Thank you very much for your time this morning.